You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. We're about to go to the phone, but I want to do honor to some of the folks that are texting in real quick. And I'll just say, first of all, Sean from Owens Crossroads, man, thanks for your service. And he gave me a list that I can't get through all of these right now, Sean, but I want to honor. He says, well, with most of the men on this list, I only vaguely knew. There are a few on here who are very close to me, as close as brothers. I miss them all, and may God himself bless their families with comfort in this Remembrance weekend. And he puts it at the bottom, Fallujah 2004. Simplify, Sean. Thanks for your service. All right, well, this whole first 2 hours of the show was dedicated to the memory of those who went before us. And coming on the air with us right now, Major General retired Joe Arbuckle, who has been on the show once before. He's an active member of an organization called STARS. It stands for Stand Together Against Racism and Radicalism in the Service. Basically, they're pushing back against woke in the military. But Major General Arbuckle himself had a stellar career. Retired in the year 2000 after having enlisted first in 1969. He went to Officer Candidate School, became a combat engineer, then deployed to Vietnam as an infantry advisor with Team 22 with the South Vietnamese Army, which, by the way, is who my dad served with on his first tour. He went to the Ordnance Missile System training, spent most of his career in the missile field, wound up being at Redstone Arsenal at some point at the same time that my grandfather was post commander there, so a lot of tie-ins. Spent a lot of his time, too, focusing on national-level strategy and logistics at high levels. Retired with the rank of two-star. His awards and decorations include, among others, the Defense Distinguished Service Medal, the Bronze Star for Valor with two Oak Leaf Clusters, six Legions of Merit, the Combat Infantry Badge, and the Army Parachutist Badge. And Major General Arbuckle, thanks for making time again today. How are you, sir?
Doing great, sir. Nice to be with you, and thanks for dedicating so much time to Memorial Day and Remembrance.
Well, I appreciate it, sir. And you've heard me mention before, and you and I texted back and forth, too. It's been a lot of time in my family just watching it as growing up, aside from the fact that I serve now, and I still have a son on active duty as we speak. But that being said, sir, I guess one of the things that really strikes me is I think you form tight bonds with people you serve with in uniform, I think sometimes so much quicker, maybe even so much deeper than you do elsewhere in life. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, there's no question about that in my mind, Phil. And so that raises the question, why is that? And a couple of thoughts on that. The reason is, I think that we all share some noble values, duty and honor, country, integrity, selfless service, sacrifice. And so all that stacks up to be a profession of arms, and it truly is a calling. It's not really a job. It's a calling. And for those reasons, I believe these bonds form so quickly.
Well, and I agree, and I think they last. I mean, one thing I've noticed is when you serve with someone, you can be gone and not be around them for a long period of time, get back together. It's like you never left off sometimes.
That's exactly right. And that's happened to me many times throughout my career. It's we just pick up the pieces right where they were when we departed the last time, and it comes together quickly. And those bonds, as you know, are even stronger when they're formed in combat because our very lives are at stake. We have to have total trust and confidence in each other in combat, and that has to happen near instantaneously in some cases. And those bonds are never broken, and that's the reason I think that you see a lot of veterans who have had combat experience only talking about that among themselves when they gather at various veterans organizations or wherever it may be, because they just feel like that they're not able to share those experiences and those bonds with civilians simply because they haven't been there and done that. It's something very, very unique. And you recall that great TV series, The Band of Brothers. Mm. That really exemplified, I think, what we're talking about here.
Well, and I agree. And hey, sir, right before you came on, too, I had my interpreter from Afghanistan, who I served with at the beginning of the war. He's now a U.S. citizen, and he was on the show, and he talked about what it felt like to come to the United States, but also the memories that he had and the people who went in harm's way and even were killed by the Taliban. So one of the things that I wanted to portray with that was that while we serve in the ranks with men and women of our own nation, there are times when we're, you know, side by side with people of a foreign nation, and the bonds mean just as much. You were an advisor with Team 22, working with the 22nd Arvin Division as a South Vietnamese advisor during your tour in Vietnam. How was that, working with foreign nations under fire?
Yeah, thanks for asking that, because that's very, very important. I'll expand on it a little bit to put it in perspective, but it won't take a lot of time. I deployed, as you mentioned, to Vietnam in early January 72. At that point, just all the U.S. combat forces had been withdrawn, either deployed back to the States or in the process. So the only people left in the field actively engaged in fighting were us advisors. And we were few and far between because at that point, advisor strength had been drawn down also radically from what it was earlier in the war. And oftentimes we found ourselves out there with two or three other Americans attached to a South Vietnamese, in my case, Army unit, in some cases, Marine Corps units. And so we worked hand in glove. We ate, slept, fought with, and depended upon each other day in and day out in combat. And for me, it got particularly intense because on 31 March in 1972, the largest offensive of the war was launched by the North Vietnamese against the South. They had planned this for years. They were waiting for the U.S. forces to get out of country, leaving just us advisors. And so they came across the border, 120,000 strong, North Vietnamese with tanks, artillery, etc. And their objective was to take the country. And they darn near did. In about 3 weeks, we lost. We had some advisors on our team killed and a lot more wounded. And it pushed the South Vietnamese division I was with clear back almost to the coast. And then we went on a counteroffensive. So the point is, we fought a major, major offensive during that period of time, became very close with our counterparts. And the hardest thing about that relationship and those bonds, Phil, was as the year ended in the fall of 72, the word was getting out that we were being pulled out. Advisors were being pulled out. And our South Vietnamese counterparts were asking us, they would say, "You're not really leaving us here, are you?" And we had to look them in the eye and say, "Yes, we're going to leave you. You've got to get ready. You've got to be able to fight on your own." And we just felt like we were deserting them, frankly. And that was one of the hardest things I've had to do.
Well, and you know, it's a shame, and not to be, you know, too melodramatic about it, but the reality is we did that to the Kurds after the first Gulf War, and then we had the Joe Biden pullout most recently from Afghanistan, which was soul-crushing for me, to be honest with you, because I was there at the beginning of the war watching people wake up to the idea of freedom and then to see it being snatched away just overnight almost in the tail end of that pullout.
Exactly, and that was purely a political decision, as you know, made by Joe Biden. He put a date on the wall there, a calendar date, and said, "We're going to pull out with that date," and there was no military reason to do that. And to my knowledge, it's the only time that a president has knowingly abandoned American citizens on a battlefield in the hands of a brutal enemy, not to mention our allies.
Well, sir, in today's Army, I mean, you're part of an organization right now that's doing all it can to push back on liberal policies and wokeness, if you will, in the ranks. Your organization, STARS, we talked about it before on the air. But let me ask you this. Do you feel like the current generation, I've got a son on active duty, so I have perspective on this, but do you feel like the current generation gets it in terms of Memorial Day's intent, like those generations of us who have served in uniform before, how we got it? I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
That's a tough question. I think the answer remains to be seen. You're really asking, can the current generation feel the same and step up to the plate at some time, like those who have been killed in defense of our country did? I don't know, because you look at these factors like this. Our values are under assault. Our traditional American values are under assault from the Marxist left. Pledge of Allegiance and voluntary prayer is no longer allowed in school. Our flag, you know, and our national anthem are being disrespected in sports games. Patriotism is being called by some from the far left as extremist. Even simple words like make America great again, not being tied with any political candidate, but just those words are being called extremist. History is being rewritten. Project 1619. Statues are being torn down. Military installations' names have been changed. The point there is our values are changing now. That's going to influence the younger generation. So what's that going to do about recruiting? About 80% of recruits now come from military families, just like your son. And you came into the military. Your dad was in the military, as you said. That's a great trend. But if the trust and confidence in our military as an institution continues to erode the way that it's been doing in the last 3 or 4 years, people are not going to be as reluctant to recommend their family members coming into the military. So, you know, it's not a pretty picture. And what we need to do is pray that our traditional values that have held this country strong and gave birth to those that have died in defending our liberties, our freedom, those are going to prevail. We have to pray for those to be reinstituted in our country.
Well, I completely agree. And I think that there have been times when we had wake-up calls. 9/11 was certainly a wake-up call, and national-level patriotism surged like it had not in decades. And I hope I would love to believe it doesn't take another jolt or wake up call like that to do it. You know, I see my own son and I talk to him and I know where he stands. I know what he would do. I mean, and I feel confident in that. And I feel like there's good folks in uniform, but you're right. Societal values still have to give us a base from which to recruit. And I think I'm more concerned about those who are considered non-recruitable or for that matter, don't want to be recruited, as not being available should the call come. That's where I think the issue is. I think we got some great young troops in uniform right now, and I'm just praying that we can get some leadership for them here sometime soon.
Yeah, exactly. We do have great young troops in uniform, and the leadership is the problem. And as we've talked about before, it comes from the very top, the four-star level. And, of course, that emanates really from the commander-in-chief, the president, with what we're calling the wokeness happening throughout our military today and the values that that represents, which are counter to our traditional American values.
Well, sir, we're winding up our time together here on the phone, and I appreciate you making some time for us. Anybody in particular you want to call out in memoriam and just make mention of having served with them or that they've gone before you?
I'll just call out one. One of the advisors during that Easter offensive I mentioned was Lieutenant Colonel Brownlee, and he's still listed as missing in action, officially on the rolls, but obviously he's dead. But he was one that we left behind, and that's as hard as having those killed in combat.
Well, Major General Joe Arbuckle, thank you for your career, your service, your duties as a high-ranking officer, and all the way back to your time, even enlisting and then heading to war. We appreciate what you've done and appreciate you still being in the fight, sir.
Well, thanks a lot, Colonel Phil. Thank you for all the great things you're doing, and you keep up the fight also.
All right.
We've got to defend this Constitution.
Roger that. Rangers lead the way. You have a great day, sir.
Well, you too. Thank you.
All right. Well, that's just cool. And listen, we're going to go ahead and take a break. We'll come right back. I've got another round of text messages, and I'm going to try and get some of them and head down that list of Alabama's Medal of Honor winners. And then coming up at the bottom of the hour, 3:30, should be getting a call from Mike Durant, Black Hawk Down. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. We are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. I'm saying where common sense is a superpower. But we're moving the show right along here, and it feels like it's flying by, Boom. I mean, it could be 3:30 already.
I know.
It's just like, good gosh. But listen, the whole first couple of hours of the show is dedicated to the idea that this is Memorial Day weekend. And I appreciate all of y'all that are texting in. I got several right now. Let me just jump on them real quick before I lose time. Paul from Huntsville. Charlie Company, 1st of the 167th, and Bravo Company, 1st of the 187th, 101st Rockassons, 2001, 2002 vet. Love this content. Listen, brother, I am so glad to hear you are a Rockasan. I got on the ground in Afghanistan when you were probably staging out of Bagram. So anyway, appreciate you. Thanks for your service, Paul. Tony from Piedmont, just my opinion, he says, the good Afghans were better people than the good Iraqis. Okay, I get it. Maybe so. But I knew good ones in both. Kenny from Elkmont says, to all my USMC brothers who gave the ultimate sacrifice and their families, Semper Fidelis. Yes, sir. Dave from Killen, just texting in about folks that he was deployed with, and we just said thank you. And Dave, we're glad you're in the system with us. JT from Lacey Springs, remembering H.D. Hamilton, part of the latter days of D-Day, who would never take the family camping due to camping nightly across France for most of a year. How about that? He came home. I guess he'd already done all the camping he wanted to do at that point. Listen, you want to text in somebody you want to honor? Like, for instance, I'm going to go ahead right now and honor my dad, retired Lieutenant Colonel Philip W. Williams, Sr., and then my own grandfather, retired Brigadier General George McBride. And I'm proud of their service, and they have given me a good name. You know, looking at heroes, I said that number one on the Triple Dipper is Heroes Among Us, but I was going to mix it in throughout the show. Let me grab another one. Leo Thorsness, Colonel Leo Thorsness. Some of y'all may know Colonel Thorsness personally. He enlisted in the Air Force in 1951 when he was 19 years old, went on to become an officer, became a fighter pilot, went to Vietnam in 1966. And on April 19th, 1967, he flew a mission for which he was awarded the Medal of Honor. It was his 92nd mission, and he was flying a specially modified F-105, which is known as a wild weasel. He was tasked with finding and destroying surface-to-air missiles. His wingman was shot down during that mission, and two crew members bailed out. But despite the fact that he was running low on fuel, Thorsness and his own electronic warfare officer, a guy named Captain Harold Johnson, they returned to the site and fended off enemy fighters while the crew parachuted to the ground. And Thorsness shot down one of the MiGs that was trying to aim at his parachuting crew members and fended off several others. His mission was actually featured in a History Channel show called Dogfights. I saw that. 10 days after that Medal of Honor mission, April 30th, 1967, Thorsness and Johnson were shot down over North Vietnam, and he spent the next several years being tortured in the Hanoi Hilton. He was 7 missions away from completing his tour. He did come home. He was liberated eventually, and Colonel Thorsness received the Medal of Honor from President Nixon in 1973, right here in Alabama. All right, we got plenty more on tap, and listen, coming up here in the next few minutes, we're going to have retired Chief Warrant Officer 4, Mike Durant, is a resident of Madison County, and most recently ran for the U.S. Senate, but he's also known to most of us for his time, behind the stick, flying Blackhawks, to include the Battle of Mogadishu, Black Hawk Down. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back.